Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 157, recorded on July 12, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, are my two buddies, Adam Christensen from the MacCast and Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. Oh, we got a double introduction.
Yeah,
That's what that thing's called, an introduction.
Yeah.
Oh, right. See, we're professionals. We know words like introduction.
Mm-hmm. And segue.
That's that little two-wheel balancey thing that WAS drives, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
I feel weird.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is it something that I said?
We haven't talked in so long.
I know. So, update on the project. The project is going, and it's been consuming most of my time, but... It's coming along, and you guys will all very much enjoy it.
When are you going to let the WHC folks in?
When I feel like they wouldn't be sending me more emails saying this isn't working than I like it emails.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Trust me, I want to get you guys on it as fast as possible. I've been talking to a couple of you personally, and I mean, really, it's just a couple people who I know will give me a lot of constructive criticism and then won't bother me too much about me not having a way to reset a password because I don't have that yet. But
really, why would people need that?
I don't know. Apparently,
just complicates their lives.
It's strange. I guess people need that. But anyway.
I just set my password to password one on everything, and then you're fine.
Yeah,
no problems.
I use one.
You never have to worry about that, you know?
Yeah.
And mine's password two, so we don't mix ours up.
Oh, exactly. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. For anybody who might take that seriously, don't do that.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So
now we won't get sued.
Exactly. So the first thing we should talk about is something that excited me when I saw it. It's not brand new, but did you guys see that you can, with the iOS 6 beta on the Apple TV, you can now rearrange your icons?
Yes,
no, I did know that.
You did know that?
I haven't tried it yet, or haven't seen it yet.
It's not as smooth as it would be on an iPhone or an iPad, because you can't... Well, you can put your fingers on the screen, but it's not going to assist you in this.
You just end up with smudgy images.
Yeah, smudgy icons that you then need to rearrange with your icon.
That explains a lot. Okay.
Yeah. So you press and hold the center button on an icon on the Apple TV, and they all start to wiggle. And then
with the remote, right? We're going to clarify here.
Yeah, on your
again,
remote.
Not with your finger.
Unless
get your hand off the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Move it around, and then press the button again, and then it'll stick there. So essentially that means I'll move all of the sports thingies down away from my field of vision, and then
yeah.
I'll be happy.
So you move them around with the little arrow thingies. Isn't there some speculation that that's just Apple getting ready for when they're going to load a ton of apps on there so you can like manage those things around?
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say that's one of those things, and they're probably dealing with a lot more than just that. Internally, you know, because this is barely something you want to do once. It's something that you want to do because you want to get it in a way that's a little more convenient for you. Maybe you barely ever use the radio feature, and there's some other things you just simply don't use, and you want to arrange it in a way that's useful to you. But once you do that, you're probably never going to want to do it again because it's not that delightful of a process to deal with.
So it's like wisdom teeth.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
So they're probably trying to get it a little more elegant internally right now. Because it is going to be a little bit more of a pain, especially since Apple wants to continue using the the little Apple remote that we were using. It's nice and elegant for the basic features that make up the Apple TV. But once we start getting, I mean, certain things that we do on the Apple TV already are kind of a pain to deal with when we're using that Apple remote. So it's, I mean, I use my iPhone and my iPad far more than I use the remote.
Yeah, it's much better experience.
Although I will say that basic navigating around is irritating on my phone still. Wouldn't you agree? Because it always seems like I always go too far.
Story of my life.
But you know what I'm talking about? Do you guys have that
I overshoot
problem?
Stuff. It's like there's a latency there, and I can't quite figure out what it is, so I end up overshooting stuff.
Mm-hmm. But for typing things in, it's the best.
Yeah. You know, the irony for me and all that is the one time when I really, really need to be able to use the on-screen keyboard on my iPad or iPhone like that is when I'm setting up an airport or an Apple TV and I have to type in the network that I'm joining because it's hidden. And then I have to type in the password with the little remote. And what a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah. The first thing that I do if I ever restore my Apple TV is I need to get the password in there for the Wi-Fi first, and then I need to log in with home sharing, because after that point I can do everything else, like logging into Netflix and YouTube and everything else with my iPhone. But even that's a pain. I hope that Apple's working on something that'll make it a little easier. Don't you guys think that the keyboard, the new way that they did the keyboard, is just aggravating?
You mean the one that's on screen and not the one that's built into the remote app?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've covered this before, but now that we've had some time to deal with it, would you say that the QWERTY layout is better, or this alphabetical layout is better?
I'm a QWERTY kind of guy.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm using the on-screen Wii keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I would like to see some icons or some more applications on my Apple TV. That'd be pretty nice. I'd like to be able to get more content on there. So with that, Mobile Me has shut down. They shut down, what was it, the 1st?
The 30th?
Yeah, the 30th.
It was the last day.
30th, yeah. June 30th.
And
but it was kind of throughout the day. I think you're right, Michael. It wasn't like they flipped a switch that morning and everything was poof, gone.
Right.
At least it didn't feel that way.
And for a limited time right now, you can move your, if you haven't moved to iCloud, you can still do that. You can download the photos that you have in your gallery if you don't have copies of them in iPhoto. And if you have any stuff in iDisk, you can pull that down as well. But for me, that's actually very relevant for me, because I've been waiting to the last second on that one, because I am still using Snow Leopard on both my Macs, and I'm pretty sure.
Old.
I know.
Did you not back up your stuff?
What stuff?
That your like iDisk and your and that sort of stuff.
I never. Okay, so what I was using Mobile Me for were the bookmarks, contacts, calendars. I think that was it. Just that stuff. And my phone and my iPad work perfectly with Mobile Me, or the iCloud rather, but Snow Leopard does not.
Right, obviously doesn't. This is my big pet peeve. I went off on my show about it, that I think Apple's being dicks. Can I say that on here?
Yeah, go for it.
I do. I want somebody to email me, and maybe hopefully somebody at Apple is listening. I want to know what the technical reason is that Snow Leopard couldn't get a little update to have it work with iCloud.
Well, there were rumors of that floating around a few months ago, that 10.6.9 was going to do that for us.
Yeah, but it didn't happen. And it's just prickish to me.
I would agree.
Am I wrong?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's Apple doing the prick thing. I think it's all about wanting to push people up to Lion and Mountain Lion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously doing that. I mean, they really are trying to incentivize people to update the software. My problem with that is that Apple makes such great hardware that, you know, very often people are on machines that are physically incapable of being updated. I would happily upgrade my Mac Mini, my old Mac Mini, to Lion if it would run it. But the reality is it can't. But does that mean, oh, well, you know what? I can't have that machine synced up with my calendar and my address book because why?
Yeah, I mean, there truly is no reason to not have those basic features, the syncing with iCal, the address book, and I'm not so sure about Safari, but definitely iCal and address book because they use CalDAV, and well, as we were talking about before the show, Adam was just working on getting iCloud syncing working on his Mini with Snow Leopard.
And I actually, iCal, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd actually done that a couple weeks ago, too. So that's how I'm syncing. I wish I could find a solution for syncing bookmarks on Safari, but I there'd probably
you just have to go to like Xmarks or what's it called now? Foxy Mark? Oh, I can't remember.
Can I do that?
You know, there's that bookmarking syncing thing.
Ooh, no, I don't.
Add-on.
No, tell me.
Oh, I wish I could remember it. I've covered it on my show a couple times.
Foxy
I think it's called
Marks?
Xmarks now.
Xmarks.
Is that right?
But is that for Safari?
It's for Safari, Chrome, Firefox, and Internet Explorer.
Will it go to my iPhone, though?
Ooh. Well, it goes to Safari, so then, oh, but it won't go through the iCloud thingy to Safari. No.
Yeah. So there you go.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, if anybody has a
Son
solution to that, feedback.
Well, you can just go to Chrome now, right?
Yeah, that's not happening.
Adam's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously, technically, you know, using iCal and CalDAV, did you do the hack with your address book too? I haven't run across that one yet. Is it kind of a similar thing with
yeah.
the contacts?
So for anybody, since we're talking about it, I'll throw the link to this in the show notes. I went to eggfreckles.net. They have an article.
I used the Chris Breen article, I think.
Oh.
Was it Chris Breen? No, maybe not. I'm lying. That was something else.
Okay. Well, we usually like to listen to the Buffon
Egg
of
Freckles.
Knowledge. But you were on Egg Freckles?
No, I was using the Mac OS X.
Okay, but yeah, it's Bringing iCloud to Snow Leopard is the title of the article. And if you got to follow the whole thing step by step. So it'll do calendar, contact, and, well, it won't do bookmark syncing, but they talk about it. But you got to do both. And they actually do iCloud email step two. So if you want to get iCloud email in there too, but I don't use that. But the reason you have to do both is because part of one plays into a part of another in terms, because it's not just as simple as putting in the correct URL, pointing it to like caldav.icloud.com. You have to do some extra stuff. but it's fairly simple.
Yeah. The other one that made me sad was, and there's a couple third-party developers that are running into this, the fact that documents in the cloud, there's certain document types that don't seem to work with that. And specifically for me, the big one is Omni Outliner files.
Yes. Well, it will work, but it would be really bad if they implemented it.
Because it's too complicated right now?
Well, it's because the whole iCloud syncing part, it isn't smart in that it can't look and figure out what inside a package is different.
Yeah.
It just will update an entire document. And since Omni Outliner files are packages, what you really need is to have something that can intelligently go in and say, oh, this image was added and this part of the XML was changed and then just push that part over.
Yeah, yeah. It's my understanding that
package files is anything but a whole single file, almost like an image.
So that's just something that iCloud syncing is just not supporting. It's not supporting going and traversing into a package for any syncing.
Apparently, yeah, right now. I don't know if that's a plan for the future or if that's just a short-term limitation, but it's causing some problems with some third-party apps that had integration, you know, with iDisk, and now they can't reasonably move or move to iCloud documents in a cloud in a smart, intelligent way. So I love what Omni did is they updated all their products and they have their own web dev service.
The sync server.
Omni sync server.
Yeah, I've been
which is really nice.
Yeah, that's
so I moved all my files over there. So I can get them on my iPad and on my desktop and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, I've been using that on OmniFocus for quite some time now.
Yeah, so people are looking for that solution, wondering what to do. Just it's free, mm-hmm. and that's how they're handling it,
yeah.
which I thought was great. I'm trying to remember what the other application somebody asked me about was like, why aren't these guys supporting documents in the cloud? And it was the same answer. It was, well, they use a package file, not just a straight, you know, document system or whatever you call it. So...
Mm-hmm. Did you see that the iCloud beta has beta versions of notes and reminders in it? So the iCloud website, in addition to mail, contacts, calendars, find my iPhone, and that kind of stuff, they're going to be supporting that very soon.
I think that's cool. However, Apple missed the opportunity to draw me into those a long time ago by not giving us proper syncing.
So, yeah, I would agree with you on that.
Or even giving us applications that offered those features.
Right. Now, I have to say that, okay, so Notes, I looked back at Notes briefly, and by briefly I mean for about a minute, because I've been using SimpleNote for quite some time, and it yep. makes me happy.
So you guys both use SimpleNote?
I use SimpleNote all the time. And as a matter of fact, if I'm like, sitting at the coffee shop. I know, crazy idea for me. If I'm sitting at the coffee shop and I have an article I want to write on my iPad, I'll do it in SimpleNote so that when I get back to my desk, I can fire up Notational Velocity is what I use. And really? It's all there.
Notational Velocity aggravates me.
I was going to say, I've become totally ADD with my notes applications on my iOS devices. So... I'm looking for advice. I've kind of locked in on Nebulous Notes because it has Dropbox syncing. So on my desktop, I can just access them as text files. And I'm using Nebulous and Markdown as my ultimate solution now. And that's sort of become awesome for me. But I have Evernote. You know, I have stuff in Evernote. I have stuff in iOS Notes or the Notes app. I have my handwritten notes I take in NoteShelf, which I think I've used as a pick on here before, and I absolutely love that for that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. I'm ADD'd between Nebulous Notes, Evernote, and I've heard a lot of good things about SimpleNote, but I hesitate installing it because I know it'll just be another place where my notes end up being just jumbled all over the place.
All right, here's why I like SimpleNote. First and foremost, it's doing real-time synchronizing. So meaning as I'm typing, what I'm typing is getting synchronized. So if the application crashes, I lose at most a few characters as opposed to paragraphs. And then I can organize into categories on my iPad. And it's just a very basic, simple application.
And they've awesome. Been and they've been around for a long time, and they've really ironed out a lot of the kinks with the syncing.
Yes, it is absolutely transparent syncing now.
Yeah, like I said, there are Mac clients. Like Jeff said, he uses Notational Velocity. Now, apparently, that's what I've been using, but it aggravates me because it's third party. It uses the API, yeah. and it's a little bit screwy sometimes. But you can always use the web interface on your Mac if you want to, if it doesn't really do it for you. But if you're doing notes between, I mean, you just can't do any better than SimpleNote on your iPad or your iPhone.
Do you guys use Markdown? Can I just make a huge plug?
I know that's
for Markdown.
I know that's
if you're
a
not
nerdy
using
thing,
Markdown,
right?
You need to learn it and use it. It just rocks.
So now on the Markdown thing. I know I need to really learn Markdown, if for no other reason, just so that I can easily work with it when someone gives me a Markdown document. Mm-hmm. When I first started to play with Markdown a while ago, it just pissed me off. Because everyone said, oh, it's so simple and it's intuitive. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, don't give me this crap, people. This is no different than learning any other markup language for my text. So don't tell me it's any easier. It's the same thing. It's just different symbols in different places.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit cleaner. It's not like learning HTML.
Okay, wait.
So yeah, I guess your perspective cleaner. Has a lot to do with it, you know.
Adam, what
it is cleaner, but still, it's a whole new markup nomenclature that you have to learn. So that said, what's your favorite app for working with Markdown on the iPad?
No, before you do that, what is Markdown? What is it?
What is Markdown?
Yeah, I've heard it. It's this nerdy Merlin Mann thing.
It's not really that nerdy Merlin Mann thing. And it's actually, I have to give David Sparks, the guy that kind of pushed me to use it. And now I use it for everything. It's great for documentation. So it's is it Gruber who originally kind of started it?
Yeah,
John Gruber kind of originally started it. And I think it had to do mainly with wanting to have a simple way to write a text document that looked like a text document when you read it, but then it has these Markdown characters in it that can be quickly converted into other formats. So to do, you know, things like bolding and setting up headings and doing
bulleted lists.
Code blocks and
bulleted lists,
yeah, numbered lists, all those sorts of things. So when you're reading it as a pure text file, it just looks like text with, you know, a few extra little characters. So, you know, if you want to bold something, it's wrapped in asterisks, right? So you have an asterisk at the beginning and at the end. If you want to do a heading, you use a pound symbol right before the thing that you're going to type. So you type pound and then type it out, and then depending on the parser that you're using, I think it's pretty standardized at this point, you know, that would turn it into like an H1. If you want an H2, you put 2 pound symbols before the title.
So this is something that John Gruber invented?
Yep.
Okay.
And so it's simple little notation like that that you can write your document out in, and if you hand it to somebody as a text file, it looks like a text file. But if you want to run it through a parser, you can turn it into an RTF or an HTML document or an XML, I think an XML document. I haven't tried that one yet. But basically, there's a bunch of parsers that you can get to go through it. And then there's a bunch of sites and stuff that like that that are starting to support it. So like something I have to deal with as a web developer now is GitHub. And if I'm doing a GitHub repository, they're README files. You can submit them in Markdown, and then they'll look nice and pretty on the GitHub website when someone's looking at your repo, because it automatically parses the Markdown and converts it into HTML. So it's also great for a lot of blogging systems support just dropping in your Markdown. So you can be working with a text file, say, on your iPad, and then when you need to post your blog post, you just drop the Markdown in into a system that supports it, and it converts it. Or you can run it through a converter like I use Brett Terpstra's Marked on my desktop.
Is there an iPhone or an iOS thing for it?
There's a bunch of apps that support it. And like I said, the one reason I'm using Nebulous Notes as my sort of note taker is it supports Markdown. So you can preview Markdown in that. But my favorite Markdown editor, actually just my favorite text editor on the iPad, is Textastic, which rocks. And I think that was a pick at one point of mine too, because it does code highlighting and code complete code. I don't know if it does. Can't remember if it does code completion, but it does suggestion and stuff like that.
All right. So with Textastic, can I convert Markdown to HTML?
Yep. Oh, and you can then FTP it up.
Really? Okay. Which is awesome because I already have Textastic on my iPad, and have used it for a bunch of HTML stuff. So that's pretty fracking cool.
Hmm.
Yeah. But you start, so I've started to standardize just doing Markdown. And it's just one of those things that, Jeff, I agree with you, it was kind of a pain in the butt at first. You know, it is a syntax you have to learn, and I still have to look things up, which is one of the reasons I kind of like, you know, I use as my text editor, TextMate, and it has a built-in dictionary, so I can just look stuff up really quickly.
So SimpleNote doesn't have that?
It might support it. There's just tons of stuff that's supporting it, and it seems to be becoming more and more universal. So it's become my new kind of de facto format, because it's just a little bit trickier than learning, you know, just writing a text file. you learn a couple little things and you're good to go and you start using them. And it does great things, like you can handle URLs really easily. You can, and there's two methods. You can do this sort of footnoting thing, or you can have them be in line. And I like to use the footnoting thing because it keeps my text document kind of free of having URLs in the middle of a text line. So what you do is you bracket them, and then you give them a number notation, and then you put them in a footnote within the markdown structure, and then they just get auto replaced when you parse it. So it's cool. It's one of those things, like, once you commit yourself to learning it, you'll learn it pretty quickly. It took me maybe a week or two to get really comfortable with it, and then now it's just like second nature.
Yeah. Okie dokie. So it doesn't look like SimpleNut has that, but no, I guess they support it in the web interface.
Yeah.
So maybe on the device.
Okay, so you could use SimpleNote to do your markdown.
You can write markdown in
because
anything
you can
that'll
do it
text.
In anything. Yeah, it's like HTML. You can write it in a text editor. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then if you hand it, the great thing about that though versus HTML is if you hand an HTML document to someone who doesn't know HTML, they're like, "What the crap is all this?" Whereas if you handed somebody a markdown file, they just go, "Oh, that looks like you're just kind of calling out this line's a little bit different than that line." You know, like a heading having a pound symbol in front of it. Oh, all the headings have pound gotcha. Symbols in front of it.
Yep.
You know, it's still text readable.
So what do you guys think about these iPad mini rumors that have just been really ramping up lately?
Well, I have to go, or I have changed my thoughts on what's happening.
Okay. So
because for a long time, I was not going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
And now I'm thinking there's going to be all kinds of 7.85-inch iPads under Christmas trees this December.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, that it's probably going to happen. So I guess the assumption we're all working under, I'm guessing, is that it's going to be 1024x768 resolution.
Right, yeah. 7.85 inches diagonally.
And so we're not going to... Are developers going to have to update their apps for this, or are we going to leave them as is? No?
No, they'll scale down just fine.
Okay. Yeah.
And so with that resolution and screen size, and knowing developers won't have to rejigger apps to make them work on the smaller iPad, and the fact that it's an open market where Apple can just go in and start raking in money, that's enough for me. They're going to make the small iPad.
Now, the question is, why?
Because Apple can make a buttload of money.
But that's not typically why Apple would jump into something. They typically have
you are
more,
stoked.
No, I think they'll have more of a reason. I think it needs to be... That they
it's
can
an
do
untapped
a,
market.
They can
they,
do a
they,
great job.
They can bring something new to the market, to that size space, that no one else has been able to do, which is a really good tablet. And it's a market where they can make money. Therefore, they will do it.
Right. No, well, I agree with you on most of those things. However, you have to say, well, if there were two options, you have the 7.85-inch iPad and you have the 9.5-inch iPad, and someone doesn't know which one they want to get, why are they getting one or the other? And I guess you could go back to talking about the iPod and the iPod mini to figure out why one would get someone would want to get the other.
Here's the thing that Apple knows. A lot of people are going to get both.
Yep.
Well, I mean, there's that, but most of those people were crazy.
No.
No, those people are kind of crazy.
No. And so going back to what you were asking, like why I came around on this is because, one, I think Apple sees the market growing in that segment, but more importantly, it's just like they did with the iPod. You know, for the longest time, you just had the one form factor of iPod, and Apple was kind of the leader in that space. And then as new competitors started to finally catch up, before they had a chance to really overtake that market, what Apple looked at was, okay, we need to kind of diversify the line a little bit and hit these certain customers that want this kind of device. We want to maintain that lead. Well, and so that's why I think they're going to do it now, is to expand it out and grab hold and make sure that they've covered all of the bases and don't give anybody an option outside of an Apple solution. I think that's one big reason. The other big reason is I think they want to, you know, maintain that app lead and keep developers on the platform. And the way you do that is you keep growing your user base. So they don't want to let any little part of a customer who's going in and going, whoa, that Kindle Fire, or especially now the new Google tablet, you know, is they're going, well, I could get those, but this one's the same form factor and the same price point and has way more apps.
Do you think it's
way more options?
Okay, so here, there's the real question. Is it going to be the same price point? Because I'm thinking that with
it's going to be about $50 more expensive.
What I'm thinking. It'll be $250.
But the thing is a consumer who's already... You're going to have certain types of consumers. You're going to have the person who's already invested in iTunes and has a ton of apps. And it's like, well, all my apps are just going to go run on this thing. Well, that's a no-brainer. They're going to pay $50 just for that. But then you're going to have, you know, you have the branding thing behind iOS and Apple that's going to help.
Yeah. Okay.
Reduce the sting of that $50. I mean, the thing is they can get $50 more than their competitors, I think, very easily. And I don't think too many people are going to balk at that as the reason that they're not going to get the iPad or the, you know, the 7-inch, 8-inch iPad, whatever we're calling it, over the Android device. And again, I think it's going to come down to software, because it doesn't matter what the hardware is to some people. And I think these are the consumers Apple's going after, is these people who are, I just want a cheaper tablet device for doing ebooks and media. But I think when you're in the store and you've got three that are all within $50 of each other and you're like, oh, which one am I going to get? It's going to come down to which one has the most things that you can do with it. And that's all about the software and that's all about the apps.
But do you really think that they're going to decrease their margins on the iPad with the iPad mini in order to gain those?
They're not going to have to decrease the margins, though.
You don't think
they just
did
the breakdown of the Google tablet, and even at $199, I think they showed that the Google tablet is making about $50 a unit. There's a little margin in there. And so if Apple makes theirs a little bit more expensive, and with the volumes that they get with their the relationships that they've already made, I have a feeling their margins at $250 on this device, especially if they go with a lower resolution screen, if it's not the Retina screen,
yeah,
they're going to save some money.
Retina.
There's going to be less storage. I think they're going to save some money.
Do you think they're going to have a rear camera on that?
Sure, they'll have a camera on it.
No, yeah, a rear camera.
Yeah,
and they're going to have.
Yeah, but they'll
do a
3-megapixel. I mean, they could get away with doing a 3-megapixel, because I think some of the competitors either don't have cameras at all or are using like a one or one and a half, right?
Yeah, they're putting crap cameras in there.
Yeah. So Apple's 3-megapixel camera. Which device had that one? I mean, that was is that the 3GS or the 3G?
3GS.
That was still a good camera. You know, it took pretty good quality pictures. And I think if you're trying to find that cost versus, technology relationship, that you can get away with stuff like that on a cheaper device. And Apple can just go, look, it's a $200 device. If you want the 5 or the 8, here's the 10-inch tablet.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to hit all those. That's what it is. It's about hitting all those bases and just making no room for competitors to slide in there and start taking market share.
So what they're doing is they're catering to customers who are more interested in either getting something that's a little bit smaller,
mm-hmm.
and
there's a lot of those people.
And, yeah, definitely. And or a little bit cheaper. And I would say it's more leaning toward the price conscious people.
No, I think I think it really is more about form factor,
really?
Which is why I think it's a good move for Apple at this point, because there are some people that, you know, hey, I just want a good ebook reader.
And something for the internet and email.
And I want one that'll do apps rather than, you know, going with the pure Kindle. Because look, for $100 more, I can get a little more functionality out of this, but really my primary goal is media consumption and reading books. And yeah. that form factor, I have to admit, is probably a little bit better for that specific use case.
Sure. And it weighs less. It fits in your hand a little bit easier, especially mm-hmm. if you have smaller hands. It's closer to a book size. There you go.
Definitely. Yeah. yeah. And it is bigger than most of the 7-inch. If we're talking about purely 7-inch tablets, and this thing's going to be 7.85, it does have a lot more screen area than the other ones. They say, I think it's around like 37% more screen mm-hmm. area. Which is significant, and it'll like we said, it's going to be 1024x768. Yeah. It'll support all the stuff that the iPad 2 currently supports, and I think that as long as there aren't issues with the tap targets being too small, I mean, because we're not just obviously on the iPhone, the tap targets are. Much well, the screen's much smaller, but I think that the size of the buttons and the things that you're touching on the screen are the same physical size. That would be the only concern. But I feel like Apple, either they're going to have to make some tweaks, or the tweaks aren't necessary. It's just going to work. What do you guys think?
I've seen
that?
Some graphics where people set up. Scale images for what a 7.85 inch iPad screen would be like with various applications. And then you can pop that onto your current iPad, and the tap targets for almost everything are surprisingly usable.
Yeah, definitely smaller. So they do relate to what we would actually see if they didn't do any sort of tweaks to.
Right. And apps. For the most part, substantially bigger than what you would have on your iPhone.
Okay. Well, then, I in that case, I would say that it'll probably be a very awesome product.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to come out around October, like they're predicting? I think that sounds about the right time frame too. Because I'm with you, Jeff. I think it's the, you know, they're going to want to lock up the holidays, and that timing seems to
definitely
be right.
Yeah, and they're going to have the new iPhone too. Probably a new iPad or iPod Touch rather. I think it'd be a good thing for whenever they announce. Do you think they're going to announce all three of these new items, or at least two, the iPad mini and the iPhone, all at the same time? Or do you think those are going to be separate announcements?
No, I think they'd do those two together and then probably also update the iPod Touch at the same time, but it would just be a quiet, hey, there's
That's
a new iPod
exactly
Touch.
What I'm thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they want to give a little bit more to the iPad mini than they would want to an iPod Touch. Because the iPad mini is almost a big iPod Touch at this point.
Or a little iPad.
Yeah, ginormous one.
Yeah. Ginormous.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that Apple's competitors are kind of doing to themselves that I find is interesting. As they push their smart screen sizes up to 5.5 inches, I have a feeling, I mean, in a certain way, they're kind of competing against their own 7-inch tablets.
Okay, well, that's very interesting, because the biggest rumor with the iPad, the iPhone 5, is that the screen is going to be a little bigger.
Just like with the iPhone 4S and the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 3GS as well.
Well, I mean, we're seeing a lot of mock-ups with a lot of consistency, a lot of components and mock-ups and sorts, that sort of thing.
It's just, okay, see my last sentence.
Which is?
Just like we had with the iPhone 4S, the iPhone 4, and the iPhone 3GS. There were all those mock-ups coming out to support that the phone is going to have a bigger screen. Then when it came out, the rumors turned out to be wrong, the mock-ups turned out to be bogus, and we still have the same size screen, just higher resolution now.
Well, yeah, I think that with last year, when we were thinking we were going to get an iPhone 5 and we ended up with the 4S, the mock-ups were significantly different than what we ended up with. And I feel like those relate to what we'll probably see this year.
Or the people that were doing the bogus mock-ups last year learned from their mistake, and they're making mock-ups that look more in line with what seems reasonable for this year. So I'm totally going to try and shoot you down on this one all the way across the board just because I love you, man.
So you don't think that we're going to see a bigger screen on the iPhone?
No. And the reason I think we won't see a bigger screen is because if you hold your iPhone in one hand and swipe your thumb across the whole screen, you can pretty much hit the whole screen without having to shift the phone in your hand. Now put a screen on there that's any bigger than this, and now you have to start moving the phone around to hit all points of the screen.
So you're talking...
I'm with him, except I think that it is going to get bigger because it's my understanding that most of the mock-ups and most of the rumors, the screen doesn't get any wider or any wider. Yeah, it just gets a little bit taller.
It just gets taller.
Yeah.
Yep. And I can extend, you know, and it's not by very many, you know, it's like by, is it 100? It's less than 150 pixels or something like that. I can't remember. Do you remember, Michael? It's not that much taller.
No, I don't recall.
So you're talking about, I can't remember the numbers, but it's not like it's a half an inch or an inch even. It's just slightly elongated.
All
basically,
right,
so, one more row of icons is what you can count on.
Seeing. Are we actually thinking that we're going to get another row of icons? Because in that case, so what I'm thinking is, and I guess you said 150 pixels?
I can't remember. I need to look up the numbers now because I'm going to get emails.
That's a lot of pixels. I think that would be about, I think, what is it, 60? Or 128? I think we're at 128 in terms of actual, like at the density the 4 and the 4S are at. So,
okay.
So that sounds like it would be, and it could potentially be an extra row of icons if we squish down the margins between the rows, but
and here's the reason why I think that's plausible for Apple to do. Because one, it doesn't change the physical dimensions of the phone in the width size, which means it's still pocketable. It's just a little bit longer. It's more going to be in the widescreen format, which is what most media has moved to, you know, with HD movies and stuff like that. So if they want to support
that's true.
HD a little bit better, it's a better dimension mm-hmm. for doing that. In looking at, a lot of people are, well, what about applications? Well, for a lot of applications, I'm thinking of things like games and stuff like that. Even if they didn't want to re-res their graphics or change their graphics, that little bit of stretching in that dimension probably isn't going to be noticeable within a game. For applications that are using like list views and the standard Apple UI icons, it's my understanding that those things will just sort of scale the space between, so you'd have a little bit more white space. If, again, they didn't want to have to redo graphics or custom graphics. I think Gruber or somebody posted an article and pointed out that, you know, Apple already kind of does this with the little notifications bar that shows up. So if you're on like a Skype call or something like that, or...
Yeah.
Blue bar thing.
Yeah, basically, they take up some extra pixels up there at the top. And what happens with the main UI elements is they just kind of squish down. So... the spacing between icon, and it doesn't distort icons. What happens is the spacing between stuff just tightens up a little bit to give that kind of extra room. So you could go in the opposite direction and not really have too many issues. People aren't going to notice that. So it's not going to be a huge challenge for developers if it goes that way.
So it's not going to be as significant a change as it was going to the Retina display.
Right. The people who are going to get hosed as developers are going to be the guys who did fully custom stuff with graphics and images everywhere in their UI, but using the built-in elements, it should kind of handle it just straight out of the box. So if that really is the case, if, you know, again, I'm just saying what people are saying, but given those arguments, then it makes sense to me that, yeah, they might go with I think they're calling it a 3.99 inch screen. I don't know why we can't have the extra 1/100th of an inch. Is that right? But
because we don't deserve it.
3.99. So just under 4 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they're saying the resolution would be 640 by 1152 and it's 960 now. So you can do the math.
I'm not going to do the math, but you could. Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to getting...
192 pixels.
192 pixels?
Yeah.
That sounds like an extra row of icons to me.
All right. Well,
what are the advantages to having a longer phone?
I will offer a concession in that the arguments you have presented are logical and plausible. I'm still skeptical.
Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical too. I mean, to me, the one thing that stands out to me for in terms of a reason to do this would be the widescreen content.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, I mean, I feel like at that point I'm almost feeling like I'm being cheated with that, with not getting the extra width.
Yeah. Which is another big reason why they might do it at this point.
More width?
Oh, you're feeling cheated by not... No, I'm not at all.
No?
I totally disagree with that. I hate the trend of these big phones. I've seen people walking around with them, and I shake my head every time I see someone whip out a 5-inch wide phone. It looks ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're awkward. It looks ridiculous. Someone's going to put an eye out.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it just, I mean, I see these guys with these big meaty hands and they can barely hold the thing. You know, it's like it just seems like, it looks like it would be uncomfortable to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know for what reason. And getting it in a pocket, like that's not going to fit in my front jeans pocket and where I keep my phone.
Yeah. Well, what it does is it creates a market for everyone wearing cargo pants all the time.
And that shouldn't happen.
No, I have retired all of my cargo pants. It's okay for you guys to do the same.
Or everybody buying, what is those things that Andy and I co, the tactical pants?
The tactical pants. The tactical pants are really cool, but not for day-to-day use.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm wearing tactical pants, I want a gun to go along with it. Just saying.
And a switchblade.
Well... two guns.
Okay.
I don't know. So I don't really want it getting any wider personally. I don't see the advantage in that.
Okay.
I only see disadvantage for me.
Yeah, fair enough. I see that. I see that now. I've been shown the light.
You guys don't have to agree with me.
I do agree.
I'm giving you the arguments that made me come around, because I fought this one for a really long time, but you know, the ultimate one to me was the fact in talking to some developers and looking at how the UI works that, hey, yeah, it does kind of already handle that to a certain degree if it's just in that one dimension.
Right, right.
And our apps are already designed to go from portrait to landscape and things move around and jigger and, you know, they squish down to make room for that notification thing. And
you think we're going to see some black bars on apps that don't support the resquishing and...
I mean, you could do that and it wouldn't be horrible either. I mean, as an app developer, if that's what you needed to do to make your app work, it's not going to, and even if the OS just handled it that way, it's not going to be that big a deal. But I've talked to some developers, I already know some developers now who do some tricky, you know, who do some non-proportional scaling between iPhone and iPads, you know, at the native resolutions to kind of deal with some things, and you just don't notice the differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a small amount that the average person isn't going to notice it unless you point it out to them. And like, oh, yeah, that is a little stretched, but...
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see NFC in the next iPhone?
No.
No?
I agree. No.
Why?
Did you see that... did you see that Charlie... what's it? Charlie... Not Wolf. What's the hack guy that is always always wins the hack a day at the Hackers Conference?
I don't remember.
Charlie.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Charlie something.
He's going after NFC this year. I think it's coming up next week in Las Vegas or whatever. So that technology just scares me. And I think it's not ready for prime time yet. And, you know, Apple is going to do the whole passbook thing, I think, as a first foray in moving into that direction. But I don't know.
You think it's too insecure?
I do.
Insecure. And the other problem is there's no standardization yet. So whatever NFC system you have, you can only use it in places that have the same system.
That's a really good point. And nobody likes it. Have you guys ever tried, like, we all have it on our credit cards and our debit cards, right? Who uses it? It's there when you go to the grocery store, to 7-Eleven, and, you know, it's got the little, hey, tap your card here. I try and use it sometimes, and they're like, oh, it doesn't work. Don't do that. Slide it through. Give me your card.
Yeah. You know?
Like, they won't even let you
use. That patronizing, don't use your technology, sir. Step away from the technology. No, but what, don't you think that the that having Apple as a major player going in and investing in a specific version of the NFC, wouldn't that push that along to
a point?
Yeah,
but you're going to have, like Jeff said, you're going to have Google do something else. You're going to have, you know, they're going to partner with somebody else. You have Square doing their thing. You've got other companies coming on board to do their thing. And you just end up with this fragmented mess. So why even deal with it?
It's like the Blu-ray bucket of hurt. Or bag of hurt? Was it bucket or bag of hurt?
I think it's a bag.
Steve Jobs.
Now, okay, so you think that it currently it's too much of a bag of hurt for Apple to jump in. So they would much prefer to continue using the old world scanning of barcodes and
that works really well. And
does.
People seem to be getting really comfortable with that for airplane tickets and for movie tickets and for their Starbucks cards and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I'm not saying that it doesn't work, and it is working. And I really only use it for Starbucks because that's really the only thing that...
I just used it for my plane ticket, and it was a little nerve-wracking. I was a little bit nervous about it, but
it worked really well for my boarding pass. What airline was it?
It was Delta, and the only thing that scared me with their system was they're like, "Hey, do you want to get this e-thing, and we'll mail you the e-ticket?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's great." So I do it, and I get the email, and it's a link to their webpage. And you have to click the link and it loads up on the webpage. And I'm like, what if, you know, I have no signal, like right at the moment I'm going to get on the plane.
Yeah.
I am screwed. Yeah,
that is a total crap way to do it.
So I took a screenshot of it and put it in my photo app just in case.
I would do something like that.
You know, based on my experiences with Delta, that sounds exactly like how they would set something like that up.
So that made me nervous, but otherwise it worked fine. Like when I got the barcode up, I just brought it up, you know, as I was in line waiting to get up there, and she scanned it in and away I went. So
that's nice. And I think
it was weird showing it to the guy
here's
the
my
TSA
phone
guy, but they had a scanner there too, is how they handled it. So he just scanned it. He just grabbed my phone and put it on their little scanner. It went beep and that was it.
You know, I was at a Thai restaurant the other day with a Groupon, and it's kind of funny. I said, "Hey, I have a Groupon, and I just wanted to let you know before we get going with this whole thing, because I feel like that's how they like to do that." And they say, "Okay, give me your phone." And she just walks off with it. I don't know where she went.
Oh, I would so not let that happen.
It happened so quickly. I didn't realize what was going on. She just like, and like 10 minutes later, I'm like, I don't have my phone.
I'm naked.
And she brings it back with my meal, basically. So she has two trays. She has one tray with our food and another tray with my phone. She goes, here's your dish. Here's your dish and your iPhone, sir. I'm like, thanks.
We just took all your, we just made a clone of it. It will be in Taiwan later this afternoon. A copy of it.
Yeah. So you guys can easily get access to Jeff and Adam's phone numbers.
I cannot imagine letting someone just walk away with my phone like that.
Yeah.
Well, what if you had a passcode lock on it? Would she come back and go, "Oh, wait, it went to passcode lock. What's your code?"
No, that wouldn't happen.
That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. I don't passcode lock my phone.
Dude, what's wrong with you?
I'm crazy.
That's really not smart.
It's inconvenient for me.
How inconvenient will it be when someone has all your data?
No, they won't, because I will lock down my phone if it ever leaves my pocket, except in that one case.
This means is at the next convention,
I got a Groupon, you got to give me your phone.
Running around the city for a couple hours? Then?
I'm sorry, what now?
Yeah.
You mean like when it comes out of your pocket, flies through the air underneath a roller coaster and then goes wandering off for a few hours?
This is what I'm talking about. I locked my phone down immediately after it flew out of my pocket on the Superman ride at Six Flags.
Well, all I have to say, Michael, is that the next convention we're all at together, you're going to have some awesome stuff in your photo stream.
Okay. So, dick pics?
I'm not saying.
Okay. All right.
I'm just going to leave it kind of open so that you can be really worried about what photos are going to show
you
up
know,
in
you
your
said
photo
that,
stream.
And then I thought you were talking about that app.
There's an app called Dick Pics?
is it called like Dick Pics or something like that? The one that puts all your photos into like multiple little frames?
If there's actually a Dick Pic app, that was going to have to be all of our pick this week.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm going to get an email from someone who like listens to with their children now. So
they just came out with the App Store thing. Well, what did I say earlier? I called Apple dicks. We already said that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's Adam's fault. And they'll email you guys anyway. They always do. All right. So no NFC. Have you guys checked out the new Twitter app?
Why?
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What are you guys using? Are you guys using Tweetbot or?
Tweetbot. Yeah, I use Tweetbot. Twitter basically, no, not basically. Twitter totally screwed the pooch, I think, with their own app when they took complete control over design of Tweety.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
used to be the ultimate Twitter app.
It was awesome.
Yeah, totally.
And
Michael introduced me to that client.
Yeah, it was my favorite back then, and then they changed it, and I was sad. I think I still have it backed up on my computer in the non-sucky version, but yeah.
Except you can't use it anymore.
I can't?
No, because they changed the whole
OAuth
authorization thing. It uses the OAuth stuff, and Tweety doesn't have that.
Oh, no. I mean, I have the old Twitter version that was essentially Tweety.
Oh, all right. I think you can use that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that sucks. Well, they have... push notifications now and something they called ambient notifications, which I guess badges your status bar when you're in the app. Ooh, and a new logo. That's cool.
Ooh, and it's still a crap app.
Yeah.
The photo app I was thinking of is called DipTick.
Oh, DipTick, yeah.
Oh, man, that is so close to a not safe for work title.
Yeah. All right, so one more, and then we're going to move to our picks. Did you see the report that News Corp is considering canceling The Daily?
Yes, and I had two thoughts at the same time. One was, I guess I'm not too surprised, and the other thought was, wait, that's still running?
Right, exactly. Didn't they break one thing? Was it early this year or late last year? They had news on... Oh, no. You know what I'm thinking of? They had exclusive footage of Miley Cyrus, like, smoking a bong or something. Right? I think that's what it was. No, it was... It wasn't that. It was Miley Cyrus admitting that she smokes marijuana, like, next to... Like, on her birthday, I believe. That was their exclusive thing on The Daily. That was the one thing that I... was aware of that was, hey, check this out on The Daily.
So wait, a young adult that has disposable income and chooses to smoke some marijuana every now and then, and this is news? How?
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly representative of the type of reporting going on The Daily.
Well, it went up 100% paywall too, though, right?
I think it did. I stopped even trying to deal with the app before it ever went paywall.
The app irritated me. UI was really annoying.
I was never pleased with the app.
Yeah.
And all I could figure is that the only reason it made it onto the App Store was because Apple chose to just not even vet the thing. They simply wanted it out there. And so they were like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Whatever you've done with your code, we don't care.
Yeah,
let's just
really
get this thing up
like
and
that.
Online. And then it gets out and everyone's like, holy crap. Has anyone actually used this? This is horrible. Boy, I'm Mr. Cranky today.
No, it's all right. We like Mr. Cranky. Yeah, they say that they're that the Daily has been put on watch, and they say that it loses $30 million a year.
Whoa.
Oh.
Which seems crazy absurd, but that's what this report from the New York Observer says. And they say that the fate of it will be reassessed after the November 6th election. So,
do you guys have any like periodicals that you get on your iPad and that you prefer on the iPad, or more specifically newspapers like that?
The only thing that I actually like and have spent more than 3 minutes with has been the Engadget zine that they have. What is that called? Do you remember? I'm going to pull my iPad.
No, wait. Oh, come on. I thought that was funny.
What did you say?
I said Reddit.
Oh, ha! That was good.
I don't know that one. For me, it's Wired, Distro, which I've subscribed to for forever. And it was only because, you know, when I get the print subscription, I get the digital one for free. And so I do it. I read it all on the digital one now.
Yeah.
Because it's more convenient that way. Occasionally, the New York Times one I will open up. That's nice. But, you know, I wish you didn't have to pay to get all of the content. I guess I don't understand. If we're going to make the transition from print to periodical, you know, digital,
mm-hmm.
it's still a cost thing for me. It's still a problem for me that I would happily pay if I could pay the print subscription price. But I have to pay this astronomical, ridiculous digital subscription price. Does that make any sense? To get just the digital versions? Like Wired, it's cheaper for me to be a print subscriber and then get the digital as a bonus, as opposed to if I just wanted to subscribe to the digital version, it cost me more. So yeah. I have to get the print one. And what happens now is the print one comes to my house and goes right into the recycle bin. And the reason is it's the old school model is because Wired gets paid for the ads that are in the magazine, but they can't make the same money off the digital version. So we're in this weird transition phase. And I'm looking forward to the day when advertisers realize that people are going to be reading these things digitally, and you can get just as much value out of your ad dollar on a digital version as the print version. It's not, that doesn't exist today, and I understand that, but we'll get there at some point, and then it'll be good. But the problem now is that I'm not going to pay a premium just to get the digital version of the content. I'm sorry.
I don't blame you at all.
I'll pay the same. If they would come to me and say, you know, what you pay for the print version of the New York Times, and hopefully they don't do this already because I haven't looked into it that closely yet, but I believe that it's still cheaper if you get the print version and then you get access to the digital version versus just the pure digital version. So that's been my only problem, is it's just more expensive. Otherwise, I probably would read more periodicals on my device.
Yeah, I don't do any periodicals on my iPad, and it's because of the cost.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is most of these sites, I think, have RSS feeds. So I could just put it in Reader, and we're getting these great apps like Reader and Read It Later and Instapaper and stuff like that that make reading that stuff on my iPad awesome, and all I need is an RSS feed. So,
you know, that's a good point. I actually use, Flipboard?
Yeah, Flipboard rocks.
That's like my my digital everything magazine.
Yeah. So I just think these guys are kind of missing an opportunity because they want to try and hold that content. But what's funny is there's other digital ways around this stuff that they just kind of, they're kind of cannibalizing themselves in a lot of ways sometimes with this content.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it doesn't surprise me. I guess getting back to our story, it does not surprise me for all these reasons that the Daily didn't make it, because I think it was purely behind a paywall and they couldn't figure out how to maybe make it reasonable. Because what was it? Was it a buck a day? Maybe it was. That one was actually pretty reasonably priced, right?
I don't know. Maybe. It was, but the app sucked and the content wasn't compelling to me.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So they failed on the other side. So somebody smart's going to come along and put these two things together, have great content, great presentation at a reasonable price, and that'll be the first one of these that is successful.
Oh, yeah.
And isn't that funny? Because that's such a complex business model, right? It's like, make something good with good content and sell it for a reasonable price.
That is hard.
It's crazy. Who would run a business like that?
I wouldn't.
Apparently News Corp.
Okay. So I have a question for you guys before we wrap up here. I have been having issues with my iPhone's home button ever since I updated to iOS 5.1.1.
Did it breaky breaky?
It's not breaky breakied. It's kind of screwed up, though. Mm. It's sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't.
Like those things, I've known a number of people who have had mechanical failures.
Isn't a mechanical failure, though.
Are you sure?
I'm almost positive because it works just dandy. If you restart it, it works. Like maybe the home button stops working. I restart it and it works just fine for a little while. And then it gets a little bit unresponsive. Maybe I'm in an app and suddenly it's not. Like right now, it's not going. The home button's just not responding. But if the quickest way for me to have it start working again is to pull down Notification Center and jump into random apps. And usually after one or two random apps, the home button will start working. See, like I jumped into weather and then that didn't work. And then I jumped into Foursquare and now it worked perfectly.
You know, my follow-up question is coming, right? So you want to just answer it now?
Have I restored?
Are you still jailbroken?
Oh, am I still jailbroken? That one. Yeah, I stopped. Trust me, this has been so aggravating that I'm currently not jailbroken.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad I was sitting down.
So right now I'm not jailbroken. And I thought, I restored and pulled my settings back and re-jailbroke. And then I just left it jailbroken. I didn't install anything. And I thought, okay, it's working. And then it slowly came back. And then I decided I would totally restore without doing the jailbreak. And it seemed like it was doing okay for about a day and a half. And then it got a little bit laggy every once in a while where I would click it. And, it's not. Okay, never mind. No, it's working fine. And now it's doing the thing where I will jump into an app. And now, right now, my home button's not working. And the only solution is to put it down and let it rethink what it's doing and try again.
I have not had that issue.
That's new to me.
Yeah, it's so weird. The only
Nor have I had anybody email me about it, and that would typically happen. Like I said, the only email I get about home buttons is usually it's broken problem, or my home button broke or stopped working.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that it's surprising that there would be something, and I've looked around, and unfortunately, there's this really squirrely trick to quote unquote improving your home button's responsiveness. Have you guys seen that? Where you know how you can force quit an app where you hold down the power button for a few seconds until you get the slide to shut down, and then you hold the home button until that goes away? That's force quitting, of course. One person got it into their head that, oh, look, my home button started working so much better after I did that. And then everybody picked up on that. And so no matter what search I put into Google now for home button problems, they all say, oh, try this cool solution. And it's not a solution for that at all. But yeah, I think the next thing I'm going to do is, because I'm restoring from my backup, I think the next thing I'm going to have to do is do it clean, except for my text messages. And that one's going to be a little bit more tricky because the last time I tried to do that, it didn't pull in my iMessages. It only pulled in the text messages. So I'm guessing that's because it wasn't linked up to my account properly because of the way that I get iMessages. Do you think that's probably what it is? That I have to be signed in to iMessages before it'll pull in iMessages?
I don't know. Okay.
Well,
iMessages
keep in mind,
broken.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's lame. I mean, it's awesome when you're on just one device and it switches over and you're SMSing or iMessaging with, like, from phone to phone with my wife or with a lot of people. It works great on my iPhone. Any other device, I don't get notified on the iPad, on the Mac desktop beta thing, which we got to give it the fact that it's beta. Okay, fine. It's still, there's just no consistency on where I'm going to get those messages at outside of my phone. It seems to only work on my iPhone for me properly.
Yeah, I only have iMessages turned on for my phone number on my phone. I don't have it turned on for my email address because after that, it just got crazy.
No, see, I have it turned on for everything. and iMessages it might as well not even be installed on my iPad. Just one day it stopped getting anything there at all.
Yeah, well, they say that that's going to be fixed, right, with iOS 6?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you'll believe it when you see it.
We're done with it now.
Okay, cool. So, iDevice picks. Do you guys have anything this week? Jeff, you want to go first?
Well, okay, I'm debating between a money spending thing and a game. Which would you prefer?
I think we should go with the money spending thing.
Okay. Then my pick this week will be Level Up.
All right.
And Level Up is an app and service that links to your credit card. In my case, I linked it up to a PayPal account and gives you your own unique QR code. And so then you can go into stores and restaurants that support Level Up and you just stick your QR code on your iPhone screen up in front of the little camera they have. It scans it and does the transaction for you. And so then it keeps track of everything you've done. And then as you use the app more, then you start getting discounts on stuff. The thing that I find to be weird, though, is that they use Android-based phones for the whole scanning system. And,
For scanning your iPhone?
Hey, you're back.
Yeah. Oh, wait, now it's telling me that my call ended.
Did.
How would you rate the overall quality of this call?
Crappy, since the
problems
since
were
it
so bad, the call was impossible. I like that one. Yeah,
the quality was actually fine and up until the point where Skype decided it didn't want to work anymore.
Yeah, and then it wouldn't relaunch, and then it just completely locked up all the internet on my computer. And
that's
so I had
awesome.
To, and then I had to turn off my airport connection.
Thank you, Microsoft.
Yeah. Hey. Okay, so before that happened, Jeff, you were talking about Level Up and how it works specifically, and how when you go to these places, they scan it with an Android phone. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I did actually, I have downloaded Level Up and I signed up for an account. However, I didn't use it. They had a little brochure for it at the table when I went to the Chicago diner. And they said, hey, use this code when you sign up to get $5 off or something like that. And I thought, oh, that's awesome. And so I went through the sign up process. And as it was, when I hit sign up, I then noticed the little link that says, hey, if you have an invite code, press here. And I screwed that up at that point. And I was so mad that I didn't want to use it at that point.
Oh,
yeah. But is it it's worth it? You enjoy using it?
Yeah, I like it.
It's
even heard of it nor seen where it is.
What's the main benefit of this?
Oh, it's a way to be able to leave your credit card in your pocket and then build up some discounts at places that you buy stuff all the time, assuming they support Level Up.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw the video for this.
So you get the discounts so you get Level Up points, is that correct? And they give you
Think that's how it works.
They give you certain discounts just wherever a Level Up would work, or maybe
or you get specials at the places that you normally go to for being Level Up user and having purchased a certain amount.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah.
And you can link your PayPal to
it. I found out about it simply because I walked in, they had just installed this in this sandwich place I went into, Lark Burger. And so I didn't know what it was. I asked them about it and they explained it. And it was like brand new. They had just finished training on it, hadn't even used it.
Oh, cool.
So I went, hold on. So I go to the app store, download the app, set up an account. and said, okay, now I'll pay for my food. And they're like, holy crap, what? And it worked.
So you actually pay, you're actually paying through your iPhone account, your iTunes account?
No, you set up, you link it to a credit card. And since I wasn't exactly sure exactly how well this was going to work, I linked it to my PayPal credit card so that, because I have that set so that there's a maximum spending limit every single day. So if something went wrong, it wouldn't like suck my entire bank account dry. But it's working
smart.
Fine.
Smart man. That's actually, so you get not only a tip or an app pick, you get a tip along with it as well.
Yeah, that there is a good tip. That's how I did mine too. But I guess I should give that another try. It only works seemingly with things in Chicago. However, I am excited to see that some places around Rockford and even in Beloit, they're using iPads and stuff for accepting payments. So it's cool that that's catching on with people. Adam, what do you have for us this week?
I have a hardware pick, and I guess it's been so long since we've done the show. I've picked this on a few different podcasts, but I don't think I've picked it here. So tell me if I have. The Monoprice, and this is a great name for a product, external battery pack and charger.
I don't recall.
Are you excited?
I might be.
Incredibly exciting product name. No, so you guys know Monoprice, right?
Right.
Do you know about Monoprice, Michael?
The dongle place, right?
The place for getting cables and stuff, yes.
Yeah.
Awesome place if you need cables like HDMI cables or computer cables or whatever. Great pricing, monoprice.com. I've been going there for years. But I forget what site I was on, and they mentioned that they had these new battery packs for smartphones and iOS devices and stuff like that. And so what immediately appealed to me about it was, one, it's a 5,000 milliamp hour battery pack. Physical dimensions, it's a little bit wider and a little bit thicker than your iPhone. Design-wise, it looks almost like an iPhone because it comes in white or black and it has like what looks like a little home button on it.
Yeah.
But that's the actual button for powering it on and off, and also for checking the battery level indicator. There's little LEDs on the front. So that first thing that I was impressed by was the size of the battery pack. 5,000 milliamp hours is going to give you a lot of charge, especially for your iPhone. I think it'll charge it up about four times, maybe a little bit more than that. But the other thing was, and the other thing that is often not stated about a lot of these chargers and stuff like that, is they usually charge at like half an amp, which is just like it would charge if you plugged it into the USB port on your computer. So it's got two USB charging ports on it. One port is a full one amp port, so it's going to charge at the same rate for your iPhone and your iPod Touch as it would as if you were using the wall charger versus plugging it into your Mac. And then for your iPad, there's also a 2.1 amp USB port. So it'll charge at the full charge rate as if you charged it and plugged it into the wall charger for your iPad.
Nice.
About the only bummer on the iPad is I think the iPad's internal battery, the new iPad, is 11,000 milliamp hours. So you're only going to get about probably half a charge, a little less, probably about a third of a charge.
Well, they have other sizes for this.
Well, this is the biggest one. 5,000 milliamp hour, I think, is the biggest one.
I thought I saw a 7,000 one. Oh, maybe that's a different one. No, you're right. Never mind. Go ahead.
Anyway, so it's definitely a large size, but it's something that you can throw into a bag. I got it because I was, I travel a lot. So it's great to just have in your bag or back at the hotel room in case you need, you're heading out and you look at the phone and it's like, oh, it's only got 10% charge and I've already blown through my Mophie. It's a good backup battery pack. And especially for the iPad, it'll keep you running quite a bit longer if you're running low on juice and can't get to a power outlet.
$30.
And then the other thing, because it's Monoprice, pricing on it, $28. And okay. So I think Mophie and some other companies have come out with ones that are almost this size. I think I was just reading about somebody has a 4,000 milliamp hour one that is $80. So, you can get two of these for less than that and have a lot of charging. And that's actually what I did. I actually bought two of them. Wow. So I can almost fully charge my new iPad with just a couple battery packs.
Comes in white or black.
White or black. incredibly simple and easy, and it works great. Oh, and you charge it through a micro USB cable that it comes with. So plug it into a wall charger. About the only disadvantage is that at that price, it does not come with a wall charger. So you have to use, you know, one that you have around. But if you have an iPhone, you should already have a wall charger. So just plug it into that.
Yep. Cool. So my pick this week is going to be a rental on iTunes. It's Steve Jobs, The Lost Interview. Have you guys checked that out yet?
I went and saw it in the theater.
Oh, yeah, so did I.
My only frustration with the one that's on iTunes is that I can't buy it, because I would totally buy it.
Yeah, me
so
too.
So I could watch it multiple times. But
yeah, that sucks that it's rental only.
It's weird. I don't know why it's rental only, other than they're just being greedy.
I would say that kind of feels that way.
So I'll just wait for it to show up on Netflix and watch it again when it's free.
Yeah. If it does show up on Netflix.
Yeah. You never know.
Otherwise, I mean, if you haven't seen it, I think I paid more to see it in the theater, and they were literally playing a DVD. So, I mean,
yeah,
I saw
the rental.
I saw the DVD menu at the end of it.
Lots of good stuff in that.
There's tons of good stuff in it, and I would totally pay to listen to that interview again, because a lot of good insight there. So check it out, $3.99 to rent, and you have 24 hours once you start renting, watching it, so you could maybe watch it multiple times. But yeah, so there it is. Let's see, what do we do now? Adam, what do we do now?
We close it out.
Oh, yeah. All right.
We thank everybody for hanging out with us. We
say thank everybody
where they can find us, and we say if we have any sponsors that we forgot to mention.
No sponsors this week, but thank you to everybody who listens and everybody who messages me on Twitter saying, "Hey, we haven't done a show. Trust me, I know." Every week, I have this building stress that starts on Monday, and I think they got to have a show out, and I it's hard for me to make it happen because I got the day job working at the paper company, and I got what I'm working on this project now, the secret project. It's real hard to get one of these shows in, but I want to get them out.
You got
to
deal with Adam and Jeff's hectic schedules.
That is an issue. Not usually. I'm not gonna
summer,
blame
people
you
people are visiting. People are going out of town.
Yeah.
See, people need to understand, you know, the logistics of this. It's just like tricky.
It is. But we're happy to do it.
Oh, yeah. We love doing it. We want
absolutely.
To do it. I think that's the thing is, Michael will be the first to tell you. I harass him all the time. Like, are we going to do a show? Are we going to do a show? Come on.
Yeah.
We can do a show. We can get it in.
When I was saying growing stress, I mean Adam bothering me every week.
And then you have me in a car texting, I can be to my desk in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there's logistics. So we try. Mm-hmm. We are really trying. We want to deliver these shows because we really like doing them. Mm-hmm. I think is the point we're trying to make. But
yeah.
So know when they aren't happening and you're frustrated, we are three times as frustrated.
Yeah. So with that, you can find all the show notes and our picks at wehavecommunicators.com. You can email us feedback@wehavecommunicators.com to send feedback or pester us or send questions, comments, anything like that.
Do we have any feedback?
I get feedback. I was actually
I think the feedback is do more shows.
That there's a lot of that feedback. I had one that before Skype totally crapped out, I was going to play one from a listener who took Jeff's advice and called the voicemail and said several awesome. Random words, and I was going to play it and then read the translation, but
plug it in at the end after we do the outro. Just tack it on the end.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah, because you always give it a little soundbite at the end anyhow. You know, something like, I lost my pants or whatever. And so that'll make a nice little outro.
Yeah. Of course, the number is 202-642-6667, and that's where you can play with the Google Voice translation if you want, or even easier for us and maybe even for you would be feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Just send an audio comment from your iPod or your iPhone. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, that's macobserver.com, and he's at jgamet on Twitter.
As always, thanks for having me on.
Of course, thank you for being here. It's awesome to have you. It's hard to think we would do a show without Jeff. And it's also hard to think that we would do a show without Adam Christensen at the Mattcast, which is mattcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
At Mattcast on Twitter. And there's the member show, member.mattcast.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Also Facebook. I have a Facebook page, you know, for Mattcast folks. They can go check out facebook.com/TheMattcast.
Cool.
I like people going there because that's where I throw, like, cool stuff that I find. Like, I'm constantly coming across, like, cool videos and cool products and cool stuff like that. And you know, the show focuses mainly on just the Mac news and tips and tricks. And so I often don't get into products. So if you want to know, like, what is currently exciting me in the Mac world in terms of products or, like, cool little video funky things, check out the Facebook page.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next week, hopefully, when we have communicators.
All right, I'm recording now.
Okay.
Underpants.
A phone. And an internet communicator.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck.
Giraffe, tequila, lime trees. There are your four words.